Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Augmented World Expo 2026, today's episode is with Victor Aguilon from Targo Stories. And so I've had a number of different interviews with Victor over the years, and this is actually the very last interview that I did with AWE, just because as I was trying to figure out like what the heck is going on in this industry right now, because it's so confusing in terms of what's growing, what's diminishing, what's new, what's sort of falling away, what's going to be real within 5 years or 10 years, where's the traction? And there's so many different like AR headsets that are there, and VR was kind of like not as emphasized this year at AWE. And so it's like for someone like Victor, who's doing these very immersive stories, then I was very curious to hear some of his responses from his experience there at AWE. It seemed to be that immersive storytelling seemed to be on a huge rise. I mean, with the D-Day Camera Soldier that they did, it was one of the award winners for the Apple Design Awards. It's just a really amazing fusion of all these different techniques and telling stories in a new way. And so for Victor, they've got more inbound quests to do different projects than they've ever seen before. And so for them, they seem to be booming in terms of just trying to navigate all these different opportunities. That can be a little bit of a stark difference from what I'm hearing from other more game-centered companies. And so immersive storytelling is certainly one of those areas that is on the rise. And I did a whole deep dive on their Crafting Crime series at South by Southwest. And so I had a chance to talk to both Victor and Chloe about that whole series that I'll be including within my South by Southwest coverage, which I still need to unpack. I did this whole 121-page report for IFA Doc Lab. It kind of got me a bit backlogged for some of the coverage, and I'll be digging into that probably after I get into my whole Venice immersive coverage to look back and to show what has been happening on the frontiers of immersive storytelling there at Venice Immersive. Venice is basically the place where all the best work is being shown from the year. So it's where all the biggest work premieres, and it's the place that I definitely try to get back to each and every year just to see what's happening with the industry. So I still have like my whole coverage that I have from last year's Venice to dig into and unpack. And then South by Southwest was a whole other like thing for all the different trends that are happening there. So there's lots of different immersive storytelling coverage that I'll be digging in here over the next couple of weeks and months. But Victor, was just great to get a chance to sit down with him and kind of like just talk about what he's seeing in the industry, what I'm seeing, and the different patterns of what's growing and what's diminishing, what's real, what's fading away, and what's based upon our dreams. There's a lot of hope that I think is driving the overall XR industry in terms of like people have a direct embodied experience and have a vision for what could happen in the future. And so it's just a matter of like what is going to be the form factor, and the product market fit seems to be like the key two things of what's the form factor that's going to stick and really take off. And then also what's the different types of experiences that are going to be super compelling for people. So for me, I think the storytelling is one of the key aspects that are going to be unlocking a lot of it. There's been a lot of focus on gaming, but I think at the end of the day, people like stories and like to be immersed into stories. And so it's one of the areas that I find to be super compelling, especially when you look at how the storytelling is connected to the broader LBE industry. But Victor, with the Crafting Crimes, has really found this kind of interesting intersection between the gamification aspects of the true crime genre with Crafting Crimes. And so definitely check out some of their previous work with Crafting Crimes. And yeah, in this conversation, we're just kind of like reflecting on the state of the overall industry, trying to make sense after our whole experiences there at AWE. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Victor happened on Thursday, June 18th, 2026 at Augmented World Expo in Long Beach, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hi, Ken. So I'm Victor Aguilon. I'm the co-founder of Targo. We're an immersive documentary studio, and I'm in charge of the production. I do what I do because I want to connect people with extraordinary stories. And I've been doing this for the past 8 years now. So we've been really living with the technology from, let's say, the DK2 to what we have right now, which is the Apple Vision Pro and all the upcoming headsets that should be announced, we're hoping.
Awesome. And maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yeah. So I started my whole career working in immersive, right? I started this company with my co-founder, Chloé Rochereuil, who's the director of all of our films. We started the company during our last year of university. So our passion for the medium was, I mean, what we're doing, the company is really the blend of her being a journalist and wanting to bring people on the field with her and share stories. And for me, it was the desire to bring that technology to more people and help it grow, because I just loved what it was able to offer. And so we evolved through lots of different phases. At the beginning, we were really sort of a 360 news agency, and we progressively evolved to our more advanced storytelling, more elaborate stories, and turning into really documentaries that can connect people with extraordinary stories around the world. And so I think the big shift for us happened in 2020 when we released our documentary on the Notre Dame Cathedral, which was for us sort of the moment when we found the fit between the kind of stories we want to tell, the audience that uses VR headsets, and a viable market also to grow a company and project. And so since then, we focused on two kind of projects. The first kind is all these historical experiences. So we've done documentaries on the JFK assassination called JFK Memento. We've done a documentary on the D-Day landings called D-Day, the Camera Soldier. And the second big focus for us is all these mainstream entertainment themes. And so we like to venture into very different, you know, genre. So we've done a series on true crime recently, a series on women chefs around the world, a documentary on the behind the scenes of a Formula One team. So we like to sort of explore lots of genres and lots of technologies, 360 video, interactive, you know, much more like gameplay, and also trying to find what is the right format for this medium.
Nice. And so you've got lots of different projects, lots of different platforms. And so we've just finished up AWE, where it's now officially over. And I spent a lot of time this week trying to figure out what the hell is happening in this industry right now. And I feel like it felt like a little bit smaller, not as many people here, a little bit more spread out, sparse. And then also just a lot of off the record conversations around just sort of the level of uncertainty of where the industry's at and where it's going. Is I don't think it's ever been higher as it is right now. It feels like we're on this cusp of it's a liminal transition, a crossroads. Things are kind of dying down and waning out. Things are new beginnings are happening and a waxing of things that are rising. But it also feels like this kind of liminal space where I was trying to get my bearings as to what's real and what's a fantasy and what's going to be a stable platform in 5, 10, 20 years. You know, it just feels like it's such a liminal time. Just curious to hear some of your thoughts of what you're feeling and what you're experiencing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting time. If we take a step back, I would say VR, like the dream that everyone had, let's say 2014, 2017, that VR would become sort of like the main computing platform. I think we came to realizing that that dream was sort of like dead, that VR headset was whatever going to be the next computers as they were envisioned. I think that dream is dead. I think right now for VR, we are entering a phase where it's potentially going to be a subset of the TV market. We're seeing a lot is people focusing much more on the entertainment side, trying to pitch much more the home cinema usage, which is something we see a lot. So that's, I think that's like sort of like the evolution of the market, which is, okay, we're working on a platform that can be general use, which is now much more focused on specific use cases. I also think that it comes at a moment which is very special in the history of the world, which is the rise of AI. And I think AI is just eating a lot of the spotlight, a lot of the money, and a lot of the investments in the space. So there is now a huge, I think, call for doing something in AI. And we've seen, you know, through the phases of this industry, you know, when I started doing VR in 2016, first, when I started VR in 2016, we were already entering what we called the VR winter. Then it was like, oh, there's like the investments are slowly going down. The growth is not there yet. So I think the narrative of the industry has never been like, wow, this thing is booming now. And I think that progressively, like over the years, we've seen some people, you know, shift from going from VR to AR when AR became a thing. And then these same people went from AR to NFT, to Web3, to crypto. And some of them are now going into AI. But I think there is like a shift that's happening where if you're really, really, really hungry, like if you're hungry to the point where you want to grow a company, you want to do 10x, 100x with what you're doing, VR is probably not going to be able to satisfy you with this, because we know the pace of progress of the industry is slow. And so I think it's difficult to attract new people in the space right now, because when you're let's say people that are, you know, leaving college now, if they're looking at all the options that they have to like build their own careers, they're probably going to favor something where they can go like 100x with AI rather than VR that feels like maybe it's going to do 20, 30% every year. So for me, we are at a time where no one really knows where the industry is going. And so that's opening up all these conversations. But I think these are good conversations to have, because we have to try to, I think in the end, we have to admit that we don't know what works and what doesn't. And everything we have done isn't, you know, it. Like we haven't cracked the industry, we haven't cracked the market. The market that have been cracked in VR have been, you know, gaming. Beat Saber was a great example. And you had Supernatural with fitness. That was like a great example as well. For the use cases that we work in you know, documentaries, entertainment, we don't know yet. Like, we learn a lot of stuff for every project. With every project, we learn a lot of new things that we try to apply to the next ones to evolve, but it takes time. And so I think it's that development cycle that takes time, which is now sort of, you know, like having people question the long-term viability of this industry.
I think from the entirety of all the time that I've been in covering VR for the last 12 years, there's always been this sort of like lived experience of how amazing VR can be. And people put that in their body and they have some sort of faith or hope or dreams or aspirations or kind of a vision, imagination in their mind as to how this could be spread a lot more widely. And so, yeah, I feel like it has gone through a number of cycles. I do think that there are actually some like growing sectors, like maybe location-based entertainment is one. There's like immersive video, there's training and simulation and defense. You know, Ori in his opening keynote did point to some of these growing sectors. And so I have had conversations with folks like Excurio where they seem to be expanding and people seem to be wanting this type of location-based experience. And, you know, we've had previous iterations where, you know, it was really about to hit this inflection point right before the pandemic, and then the pandemic hit and everything got shut down. And then it kind of went nascent for a bit. But I do think that there's a bit of, at this moment, a lot of seeds being planted where there's still, like, I can see these points of hope, but I can also, over the course of the week, had a lot of conversations with people, like off the record, just trying to get a sense. And there does seem like this, like, situation's a bit dire in terms of just trying to drum up work for certain agencies. And in Europe, there's different obligations to report when people are going to get laid off. And so there's extra pressure in terms of like getting to the point of whether or not they need to start laying people off. In the United States, just kind of like surprise, you're laid off and there's no kind of warning. But we're kind of in this liminal state, I think, right now where people are kind of scrapping around, but also trying to figure out what the hell is going on with what's growing. And there has been a lot of new headsets with Apple Vision Pro. There's been the Galaxy XR and there's Android XR. And so I guess one way I think about it is that there's the hyperscalers like Meta that do want to see that exponential growth. But I do think that there are the ability for small businesses to make a profitable business. It may not be hyperscaling and it may be slowly growing, but maybe not at a pace where venture capital is going to want. And so I feel like there's still a place for like the whole ecosystem to kind of grow organically from the ground up with small businesses that are having sustainable small private entities that are profitable, maybe not growing as fast as maybe some want, like this 10x to 100x. So I feel like that's kind of where it's at, where there are these opportunities for people to find a niche. It's just not going to be at the hyperscaler and exponential growth phase.
It's a good point. I think I had this conversation last week with someone and it revolved around sort of like the VR mystery, which is the people, when you show them VR, when you show them something in a Vision Pro, when it's a great story, like people still are extremely moved. Like there is no doubt about the power of the technology. The real question is like, what does the adoption look like? And I think it's the first time we're like faced with something where people really, really love the medium, but somehow not enough to the point where they will go out and like buy the headset for themselves to use it on a daily basis. And I think it's like sort of trying to reconcile the human lived experience when you're faced with someone who loved a movie or just like an experience, and trying to like reconcile this love and this enthusiasm with the fact that there is no like adoption behind it. So I think that's the thing we're trying to grapple with. You mentioned Excurio. I think they found a format that works. That's very easy. And that's, you know, that's something that's predictable. That's something that's highly like scalable, repeatable. Like, I think it's a great example of companies trying and finding a product market fit in this market. And now they just basically need to expand because there seem to be more and more people that want to join. The at-home usage, because this is what we're talking about when we're talking about Meta, you know, Apple, Google, like these companies are going to be interested in this market only if it sells tens to hundreds of millions of units in the long term. And that's the question. So I think what we're seeing also right now is no one knows what the right form factor is. I think for the past, you know, in 2016, when I started, there was a consensus that we just need to, like, we knew what a VR headset looked like. Today, when you walk on the floor of AWE, there's glasses, there's like mixed reality glasses. Sometimes they have displays, sometimes they're AI glasses, sometimes they're like full VR headsets. So it's very difficult also to know what the platform is, where the platform is going. But I think it's a good thing, because we don't know means that we, like, I sort of have a rule of thumb for success, which is if you don't know, then it means that it doesn't work, right?
Just by looking at it, or what do you mean?
No, what I mean is, like, when you're trying to assess the success of something, if you don't really know if something is successful, then it's probably not successful. Because if it was successful, then you would know it, because you will see, like, the growth, and you will see the demand grow, and you will sense the product market fit. I don't think we found the product market fit in VR. Like, the VR form factor still isn't the final one. And we tend to forget how much we are limited by the form factor of the devices. So by the progress of the chips, of the screens, of all these things, the batteries. So there's all these elements that are, like, holding back sort of the potential of what everyone here is trying to make, which is content, platform, software. And so it's that big question today is, what is going to be the form factor and where all these headsets going to be used? And I'm extremely optimistic when I look at the future, when I read what's available online in terms of what the next headset look like. They look much lighter. We're trying to move away from something that has a strap to the back of the head to, like, moving to glasses. I tried the Project Aura here, from Qualcomm and Xperia. And I think we're trying really to go, like, a different route, something that's much lighter, much more socially acceptable in some ways also. And the question is, are people interested in this? And is it really a question of form factor? But there's only one way to know, and that's why we're here, because I profoundly believe in the power of this technology. And I do believe the form factor is the biggest thing that's holding us back. And so I'm very happy to see all these changes, even though that means that, yes, some companies are going to be struggling. In the end, if all the companies are doing well, but the market is a bubble of its own, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, we need headsets to be sold, people to enjoy the experiences. And so that's really what this is about. I think it's just difficult to accept that we're still in the discovery phase of a market when some of us have been here for more than, 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious to hear about your journey here at Augmented World Expo. What were you coming in? What kind of questions were you asking? And what's kind of your thoughts at the end here?
I come here for the people, and that's always the thing that I love the most here. Like, these big events, and especially AWE being in Long Beach, brings lots of people from LA. And it's just a good place to reconnect and for the community to live. Having this conversation here is a good example of, like, what this event is for. It's about, okay, trying to make sure that the world I live in when I'm working, behind my computer, trying to, like, pitch my projects, develop new ideas, make sure that my sense of reality actually aligns with what other people are seeing. And it allows me to, like, do a reality check of, like, okay, are we the only ones seeing this moment where no one really knows where things are going? Or is this, are we the only ones, or is it something that's widespread? And the weirdest thing is, I think there is this phase right now, which is 2025, 2026, which is in between headsets, roughly. I'm very optimistic about the end of 2026, because we are expecting major announcements, in terms of headsets. And so I'm expecting a revival for 2027 and new interest. I'm also suspecting and seeing, the traditional players getting back to also funding content, because they realize that one of the biggest routes to success might be transforming this into a entertainment platforms. So AWE is just, like, one of these great places that brings so many different people from all these different worlds, from, like, software, hardware, content, like, production. And that's really what I enjoy here. So my takeaway is, I don't know if there's fewer people. I wouldn't say so. Like, it, for me, it's been my busiest AWE, because we're also getting tons of inbound for, what we're seeing for the next headset and so on. So for me, I will say it's actually been one of the busiest ones, even though I hear some people say, oh, it felt a bit quiet. I don't know. Like, from our side, it actually feels like we've never had this much, like, volume of projects currently being pitched, and larger scale also than what we used to have. So I'm very optimistic for what the future of this industry holds. And I'm very optimistic for, like, how much we're going to be able to contribute to this. But there's all these open-ended questions about what's going to be the right form factor long-term, or people interested. Like, these are things that, if we can't pretend we know, like, we have to accept that we don't know, and that's fine. We're in the discovery process. But I think it's trying to accept, that.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say that. And I just want to reflect that a lot of people that I was getting much more of that kind of doom and gloom around the frontiers of the future of the industry was more from the gaming side. And then there's kind of, like, a similar thing that's happening in all of gaming right now that is so uncertain with all the layoffs. But you happen to be in an industry where storytelling is at the center. And so it's really great for me to actually hear that it's almost like a time for the storytelling aspect rather than the gaming. I think Meta really doubled down on the gaming was going to be the thing, but it could be that it's actually the stories and the storytelling and like these deep and meaningful experiences that is going to be the thing that is kind of the thing that is the killer app of sorts that people bring people back. But for me, it's great to hear that you had so much inbound requests and interest.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it wasn't like one or the other. You know, I wish like gaming would continue to like grow and that, you know, immersive storytelling could like grow like side by side. The thing is, the audience that they are targeting are so different. I think we sort of like, and that's probably all linked to the moment we're going through right now with the Quest 2. I mean, the Oculus Quest 2, when it got launched, we had like this massive, you know, inbound of like new users. I think, I don't know how many they sold, but probably between 20 million, 30 million headsets. One day we'll know, we'll have access to the data. But that's like the estimate. And that was like a big influx of like new users and people that are like on the platform. And the thing is, these people didn't return when they were the Quest 3. They didn't upgrade to the new headsets. And then I guess they slowly stopped using it. When I looked up the release date of the Quest 2 actually today, and it was in 2020. And so what I'm thinking is maybe if the kids, you know, they were like 13 to 15 year old when they got a Quest 2.
During the pandemic when they had nothing else to do.
Yeah, and maybe now they're like 20 something or like, you know, 18 to 20 year old. And I'm like, okay, maybe these people are now going to be interested in some sort of like different type of content. And they will be, they're already educated with VR because I've had those headsets back then. And so maybe when the next headset, which seemed to be much more focused around entertainment, maybe they're actually going to be the next thing they want. And maybe they won't buy a TV because they don't want a massive black screen, you know, black box in their living room, and they just want a TV. So I think it's, I think the entertainment use case is probably like one of the only ones that hasn't been properly like tried, to be fair, because gaming's been like massively funded and, you know, like it was a big hope, I guess, for Meta that this would be the way to grow the industry. I've always believed that we need much more general devices like entertainment towards like traditional TV, YouTube, like just the big screen. It's such a simple but powerful usage. So I'm very excited for what that now it seems to be in focus, whether at like, I think at Pico, you know, even at Google, at Meta, I feel like they're focusing a lot on the entertainment use case, which I love. And I think this is largely also due to the fact that when Apple, you know, released the headset, one of the things they said is, you know, in the pricing comparison, they compared it to a home theater. And so it takes time to rebrand the whole technology to like a different use case. But I like to compare it maybe, you know, to the Apple Watch. Like when the Apple Watch was released, it was sort of like a very generic computer. Like they didn't exactly know what it was going to be used for. And now it's very clear that the Apple Watch is mostly a fitness device that you use to track your health and your sleep and your heart rate and when you go for a run. So it's that uncertainty. And I think now, like, okay, we've tried gaming. Clearly entertainment's the next one. We'll see, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But I do have a good feeling, at least for what week, how much we can contribute to that next wave. I do feel very optimistic.
Yeah, I was curious to hear your thoughts on, you know, so much of your projects have been fully immersive VR and using the full kind of field of view of 360 video and or 360 sphere of the field of view of like the fully kind of immersive type of quality. So when I look at a lot of these glasses, it's much more like smaller or, you know, if you feel the full field of view, you see the edges. And so it's not as fully immersive. And so I don't know if you like mixed reality is a good form factor, or do you get excited about, you know, telling stories on the next wave of AR glasses and mixed reality glasses?
Yes, I think the field of view from like technical perspective, the field of view is going to expand. No one wants to have something that's cropped in their field of view. Like you want something that like that feels natural, not something that's like you have to be really focused and not to move to watch it. We're in the business of immersive stories. So when I look at the Ray-Ban Meta display that have like one display on one eye, I'm like, it's not really relevant to what we do. It falls in the realm of XR for some reason, but I don't think it's XR at all. It's more like an Apple Watch stuck to your face.
It's an augmented reality, or, you know, so it's like, it's all the R's. So is XR is VR, mixed reality and AR. So it's more of the AR smart glasses kind of realm. Yeah.
But it just, it feels much more like an extension of like an app I would have on my phone that would like show up there, but it doesn't belong to the world of immersive storytelling as, you know, that we're interested in. So these glasses, they don't feel particularly, you know, like what we would work on. But the mixed reality aspect is actually really interesting. So one of the first learnings, I believe, is that no one wants to be completely cut off from their world all the time. And so mixed reality is pretty good because it helps you reconnect with what you have around you. And from a developer perspective, it also helps you focus the attention, which means the amount of things you have to build. So let's take a concrete example of how we've evolved for this. You know, JFK was like a three, like the JFK Memorial documentary is entirely rebuilt in 3D, 360 degrees around the viewer. That's a huge effort that you have to like rebuild those scenes. And so the thing is with mixed reality, and Crafting Crime is a great example of this. Now we just focus the attention on like objects that you put in front of the viewer. So for us, it's also a much more economical way to build experiences so we can craft more. And that's just better for everyone because we can produce more, so viewers can watch more. And in the end, we have to find stories that work for the medium. So we are very open to like seeing the different evolutions of the format. There's no, like, I think what we love is being able to like use people's space to make them connect one-on-one with character, with stories. And as long as we feel like we can achieve that with the current devices that we're working on, we'll keep doing it. And so I'm very, like, all the mixed reality things that we've actually done, you know, Crafting Crimes is probably one of our best performing titles ever. And so we're learning. It's part of that progress where we're just learning. We love 360 video. We switched to 180 video. Then we're doing mixed, fully, you know, 3D real-time world around the viewer. Now we're doing mixed reality focused world. Now we're trying to rework the pipeline so we can even produce more because we see a huge correlation also between how often you're going to ship and you're going to make something available to people and the user base growth. So, and it's a topic that I address in one of the talks I gave here, which is we need to think much more about the formats and we need to make sure that people know what they sign up for when they get into experiences, that they can come back, that you will have, you know, you have new things frequently. Otherwise, the platform just feels dead to everyone.
Yeah, thanks for that. And looking forward to airing my South by Southwest coverage. That's about 15 to 20 hours of sort of making my way through. So I have a nice conversation with you and Chloe about the Crafting Crimes to dig into that whole genre of true crime immersive VR podcasts, which are really cool. So really love those pieces. So yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'm just curious, like, what's next for Targa Stories?
Yeah. More of what we do. So it's always tough to talk about the projects that are not announced yet, but I think our next project that we're going to be announcing takes the best of what we've learned doing our historical documentaries. So the fact that people love 3D archive materials and, you know, 3D remastering of the old footage to make them look really, really real and like lifelike. And the level of interaction that we developed for Crafting Crimes, which is this small interaction that bring you into the story, that give you a sense of control and of miniature modeling. So once again, you know, it's about the next project is really going to be our most like VR native kind of project where it's just the learnings of like, I don't know, 8 years of doing historical experiences and 3 years of doing like real-time mixed reality interactive experiences and trying to blend everything into one new app. And I'm really excited about this. So that's this. And then we're doing always lots of, you know, immersive video experiences that we can't wait to talk about.
Awesome. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of XR and this type of immersive storytelling might be and what it might be able to enable?
Yeah, the now, you know, we've been through this podcast many times. So now I know this question. I will stick to what I think I said maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, which was blending time and space. There's something that I truly love about how immersive technologies like change our relationship with time and space. You just look, it's something I discovered when we did the Notre Dame documentary. We were able to transition from the moment when Notre Dame was destroyed to the moment when Notre Dame wasn't destroyed. And there was like, it messed up with my brain. And I think it does it to everyone. It's like the sensation of time travel as close as it gets. So the power of the technology to blend time and space is just, you know, something I truly love.
Awesome. Is there anything else that Stefan said you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
Keep at it. I think the only way this is going to work is because if we keep trying. One thing, I'm a teacher in my university, you know, like I try to train and coach young entrepreneurs. And one thing I tell them is sometimes the narrative we read in the media about startups that fail is about, oh, this startup has failed, so the founders like quit. And the reality, it's always the opposite way. It's always because people quit doing something that then it fails. And so as long as we keep at it, we will, you know, we will find a way.
Awesome. I think the World Cup's going on up here. So we got some cheers going on from the World Cup. But But yeah, I feel like it's a good omen here to see the cheers. Yeah. And I feel like there's a bit of, yeah, keeping the faith. I feel like that's a theme of like, despite the empirical evidence in the outside world, there's a bit of your own embodied direct experience that people are committed to this with a faith and vision that there's in their own imagination of what could be and what is, in terms of finding little pockets where there's at least sustainable businesses in VR and XR. So yeah, that's kind of a takeaway. And I'm really glad we had a chance to talk, because I was on a bit of this is like a VR winter, it's over, it's dead. But I do think that there are some opportunities for folks to keep the dream alive of sorts. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.